Tonight, hey, it was BYOG, bring your own guts.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. He ran it back 109 yards. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Caught, racing, touchdown, Nittany Lions. We've got a ball game in Necktown.
But, sweetheart, this pick is strictly business.
Hello, Heisman.
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast, back for 2020. I could not be more excited, and I have to get right out to my guest because he's not even a guest at this point. He is essentially the host number two on the show. He is Rossi Three Stacks. Rossi, like Doug Flutie in 84 or Cordell Stewart in 94, just when you thought they had us down, we come back and we pull out the miracle at the last minute. We're going to have college football this year.
Buddy, that was a huge error on the part of everybody in America thinking that college football fans collectively wouldn't pull together and make this happen. There is nothing, I don't know, you know the Waffle House rule where, like, if a Waffle House is still open, like, that's how you know how bad a disaster is?
Yeah.
I feel like college football is the Waffle House of either the sports world or just the world in general. Like, if the SEC is still playing, if the ACC is still playing, things are okay. We're not that bad yet.
Yeah, unless you're in the Big Ten.
Well, it's not every Waffle House stays open, you know.
Are there even Waffle Houses in the Midwest?
I don't know. Certainly not as many as there are in the Southeast, for sure.
That's a good point. Yeah, if only Indiana had a Waffle House, maybe we'd get to watch the Hoosiers play some football this year.
Yeah, dude, that's a good column. We'll spin that up on collegefootballcountry.com later today.
There we go. Speaking of collegefootballcountry.com, the website back up and running. I'll be writing throughout the season. So got my first big article up this week, my 11 bold takes, and boy, are they bold for this week's games. I got called out for a couple of them. We'll get to those in a few minutes. One or two of them might not have been so bold, but you gotta write the headline. It's all about getting those clicks, man. So. Had to go out on a limb.
Amen.
We got a lot to get into today, Ross. We're going to go through some over-unders, our favorite. We're going to get some win totals this year and for the season. And then I'll go through some of those bold takes from CFBCountry.com. We'll get your thoughts. And then we got some games. We got some real live football. We're recording this Thursday morning. We'll have Miami and UAB tonight. But the rest of the games are Saturday. Dude, can you feel it?
It's... Just you saying those words just sends a little shiver down my spine.
Dude,
can't wait.
I watched 95% of the game on Monday night between BYU and Navy, which was, quite honestly, that was a war crime, what BYU did to Navy.
I have never seen a team be just so physically outmatched. Yeah, turns out practicing tackling is a good idea before playing a tackle football game.
So... we'll get into that in a couple minutes when we talk about like the games this weekend, because it's definitely going to come up, week one. But just all season long, I'm not going to lie, I'm a little scared to bet on college football. I have no idea who's tackling, who's practicing, who's playing what positions. I feel like this is as much of a crapshoot as it's ever been.
Absolutely, and teams are. I mean, at least in the ACC with their new protocols, I think teams are not going to find out the results of their Friday test in a lot of cases until Saturday at like 9 a.m. So in a lot of cases, you might have no idea. I mean, it's like everybody on the team, basically, you have to treat as questionable like you normally would with like an ankle injury, see if they're going to play. And every Saturday morning, you're going to find out. Now, obviously, most of them will be, but no, it's crazy. What happens if, Trevor Lawrence tests positive? You know, there's all kinds of things that you just have no idea. So you're exactly right. It's such a crapshoot more than ever.
Shout out to Lincoln Riley for just screwing with every gambler in America, saying he's not going to release their COVID testing results all season long.
I know.
Everyone was all worried about, it's a public health crisis. I'm just like, what's the point spread going to be? I'm more worried about, maybe I'm not more worried about that, but that's a big deal. Like, you had there was a school earlier this week, I want to say it was Colorado, that partnered with like a sports betting company.
Uh-huh.
So, like, gambling and college football are getting closer and closer to, you know, actually doing the thing here, and yet you still have coaches who are like, we're not going to release, not let alone injuries. It's one thing. Some of these schools don't even release full injury reports, but to not release your COVID testing numbers seems like a little, maybe not the best idea, but it's definitely going to mess with our betting lines all year long. All right, Russ, let's dive into these games. All right, we'll start in the ACC. We'll start with the conference you and I know best, and we'll go down the line here. So just to let everybody know, 10 ACC games, one non-conference game. They're kind of dispersed all throughout the year. There are no non-conference games against any Power 5 opponents. In fact, there's only – or I'll say, what is it? You got Georgia Tech is playing UCF, and I believe there's one other ACC team that has like a even like a remotely challenging non-conference game. But most of these are going to be cupcakes. So you're looking at 10 ACC games, one non-conference, so an 11-game schedule. So the over-unders have been adapted to that. We'll start at the top. We'll start with Clemson, Ross. Clemson's at 10.5. So this is what you do every year. You take the best teams and you basically, are you betting on them to go undefeated? Are you in any way, shape, or form tempted to bet the over on Clemson?
In some way, shape, or form, yes. But as always, I'm not going to. I can never touch the Clemson over-under. Usually it's 11.5. This year it's 10.5 because, again, there's one less game. It's just so hard for me to bet on a team to go undefeated, even though Clemson keeps doing it. But at the same time, it's so hard to bet on Clemson to lose until they do. So I don't touch it. A gun to my head, I would bet the over. That's what I would pull the trigger on and just say, until Trevor Lawrence loses a regular season game, I'm not betting against it. But that's not one I'm going to touch.
Yeah, man. So my thoughts exactly. I think if you had to bet it, I actually would bet the under. Because there's just so much that can go wrong. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you think about Clemson. You know, you're right. Trevor Lawrence never lost a start in the regular season, undefeated against his ACC opponents. They've only lost two games in the ACC in 5 years, which is insane. Yep. But every year, as we all know, there's always a game where Clemson stumbles and either loses or almost loses. You know, it's been Syracuse a handful of times. Pittsburgh, we remember a handful of years ago in that field goal game, lost by field goal in Death Valley. Last year, as you well know, North Carolina nearly beat them. So even if they have Lawrence, even at full strength, they still have that opportunity to lose a game. Then you add in what we were just talking about with COVID, and you know, it doesn't even have to be Trevor Lawrence. I mean, what if their wide receiving room gets wiped in a week?
Which is already depleted.
Which is exactly. You're already without Justin Ross for the season. Xavier Thomas on the other side of the ball, he's expected to be out for the season at two. So they're already down a couple of guys. They've got plenty of talent. They'll be favored in every game. They'll probably be favored by at least two touchdowns in every game if they're completely healthy. But again, you're essentially betting on nothing to go wrong in a year for Clemson for a team that already every now and then has a game that they might stumble. And I'm not betting it, but if I had to, I would bet the under. You're betting on everything to have to go into place in a year where so much can go wrong. So I'm not touching it, but I would lean towards the under. But as you said, as you perfectly said, you have to be a complete gambling fiend to want to bet on a Clemson win total because there's just no value in that. You can get value other places. You don't have to bet on Clemson. So let's move on to some more, I think, interesting numbers. Let's go to your boys, North Carolina, the Tar Heels. 7.5 is the number. They went 7-6 a year ago. Mac is back. He's been macking all summer long everywhere he's been. He's on ESPN. He's on Fox. He's on every radio station, TV show, podcast, it feels like, in America. He has completely, Ross. I mean, look, he has completely changed the entire culture. It's the most cliche thing in the world, but he's changed it in North Carolina. They feel like a border. I mean, they're never going to be a football school, but football matters in Chapel Hill for the first time in ages, and that's all because of Mac Brown and his coaching staff. And obviously bringing back Sam Howell, he's the best quarterback in the conference, not named Trevor Lawrence, incredible freshman season. They bring back a ton of starters on offense. I will leave the floor to you first. You and I talk about them a lot all off season, it feels like. But let's hash it out here. 7.5 is the number. What do you think about Carolina?
Yeah, so we'll talk specifically about the number first, and then we'll talk a little about the team. But so the price is finally at a point where I feel comfortable betting the over. We had texted a bunch this summer, and I think it was under the previous schedule where I want to say that it was at like 8 or 8.5.
Yep, it was.
At one point against, you know, that was including games against Auburn and UCF. And yep, there was a very real chance Carolina was starting the year out 0-2. They, I think, were a big beneficiary of the new scheduling. You obviously lose those two games. Yes, they get Notre Dame, but the schedule sets up decently well for them. To start out with a Syracuse team that we'll talk about in a little bit that's a mess, and then Charlotte, and then immediately a bye before getting into kind of the bulk of the ACC schedule, sets up really well for them. You could almost couldn't have scripted it any better. So at 7.5, I think they are at least fairly priced to where it's not unreasonable to think that they could go 8-3 or better. I think they are priced the same as Virginia Tech and Miami, which is exactly where they should be.
Yeah.
I think those three teams and Pitt, honestly, although Pitt, I might talk about them in a minute also, just has a brutal schedule. But the price being at 7.5, I think is spot on. So if you look at UNC, I think, say they lose to Notre Dame, which they're supposed to do. After that, there's no other game on the schedule that you look at and say they're definitely going to lose that game. They've got toss-up games against Virginia Tech, Florida State, and Miami. And so they kind of just need to go 1-2 in those games, and they hit the 8-3 number. So I like the over here. I did not like it under the previous schedule. I think the price has come down to a point where I'm comfortable with it.
So I agree with you. I agree with you. And I think that they may – I don't know that anybody benefited more from the new schedule than North Carolina, because
NC State
benefited.
Oh my God!
NC State. Sorry, I was thinking Pittsburgh. You're right. Yes, NC State did. Yes, NC State definitely did. We talked about Pittsburgh a second ago, but yeah, NC State. I mean, but North Carolina went from, as you said, I mean, what would have been a really, really difficult open to, and North Carolina is the kind of team that has been feeding off momentum, right? I mean, coming off of the end of last season, great recruiting class. Everybody seems to love this team. They're really confident. Had they played Auburn, and I think they could have beaten Auburn. I think they would have beaten Auburn. But had they beaten that Auburn team, had they beaten Central Florida, UNC likely would have been, if not in the top 10, very close. I think they probably would have been top 10 by that point, by, you know, the end of September. And that's a ton of momentum for a team. Now, had they lost some of those games, you worry about maybe losing some of the confidence that they had built up over the end of last season. And you never know with 18, 19-year-old kids. I think that's a really – that's a legitimate thing. But to not have that, and now to look at a schedule where – I mean, they would have to screw up royally not to be 3-0 going into that Virginia Tech game in early October.
Yep.
And I'm with you that there's I don't even know really who's going to challenge them other than those games you talked about. Notre Dame, of course, and then Virginia Tech, and I guess Miami. Florida State, maybe, but I sincerely wonder if Florida State can score enough points to keep up with Carolina. That's where I'm worried.
See what Mike Norvell can do, obviously, if he can, one, keep control of the team and the locker room and, you know, enough to install his offense. I think he actually is a good football coach. It's a matter of what can he run a program of that magnitude. But yeah, man, with UNC, look, I think the optimism comes from, and there's a difference between the optimism and the hype. I think the realistic optimism comes from, like you said, Sam Howell comes back. By all accounts, the kid has just this incredible work ethic, so we're not looking at a sophomore slump. He's probably going to be even better. Matt keeps talking about how they're going to free him up to run a little bit more, which he did really for the first time in the bowl game against Temple.
Yep.
And broke off two or three big runs. And that's all he really needs to do. There were times last year where they knew that he wasn't going to run, and yet they'd still kind of run this RPO thing. So guys would just come crashing down on the running backs, and they have two really good running backs, so they still did okay. But just that extra element that can free up a little bit more space or make a defense defend just one more thing, even if he pulls it and runs for a first down two or three times a game, it makes them that much more dangerous on an offense that was already really good. They bring back four starters on the line. It's just amazing to me what Mac has done in a year with this program, to where last year there were question marks basically everywhere but running back, and now you've answered almost all those questions. Last year you had two linebackers who had never played a game other than at quarterback, and now one of them is an All-American. And the other one is a very underrated, very solid player in Jeremiah Gemmel. The secondary last year was a mess. I mean, they were wounded worse than pretty much anybody except for, I guess, NC State and then, you know, Virginia Tech by the end of the year.
Yeah.
All those guys are back and healthy. And then they've brought in Kyler McMichael, a transfer from Clemson. They've got Tony Grimes, the five-star freshman who enrolled a year early. That's a guy of that magnitude. Yes, he's young, but he's like their fifth cornerback right now. So they have really flipped the talent on the roster to a point where their question marks coming into this year are more about depth rather than finding guys that are good enough to play.
No, it's a great point.
I think I'm sorry to cut you off. I think with Carolina, the offense, you kind of know what you're getting. A lot of people think this is the second best offense in the conference behind Clemson. The defense, I think, will be better than expected. Their biggest question mark is on the defensive line. I think they're really strong at linebacker, and they are much stronger than people are talking about in the secondary. But the line, really both lines, get weak pretty quickly. So they're going to need some guys to step up. I think if they start seeing any injuries there or COVID's in it, it's like it's something to monitor. And so with any of these, like you feel squirrely about these bets, especially for anybody but Clemson who doesn't have tons of depth. Something to keep an eye on. But I think as it relates to this bet, I feel comfortable that they will go at least 1-2 in those toss-up games, take care of business against everybody else. So I like them to go 8-3, but I think they're very much in the same class as Virginia Tech, Miami, and Pitt.
All right.
And
so,
Louisville.
So, right. So you just made a great case for why Carolina is going to be better, and just about all of it is true. Here's the case against Carolina for a minute. Now, with the schedule, I'm also taking over 7.5. The schedule is too easy. They should win 8. But the as you said, I like the way you put it, the difference between optimism and hype is an important thing to think about, because it's okay to be optimistic and to feel good about the foundation that Mac has set in a year. North Carolina beat one team last year with a winning record, and that was Temple. And that was a great game. You beat Temple in the bowl game. Nice win. Again, as we all know, you cannot overreact to bowl games, but that was a dominant game. In the Military Bowl, they beat Temple by 42 points. But while Mac has done such a great job recruiting, that's what Mac does. Mac has always been a great recruiter, and especially in the state of North Carolina, that's what they needed. I feel like people are confusing Mac's prowess and his staff's prowess for their ability to recruit with their ability to coach. Because while they developed talent at some key positions, like you said, this team made some catastrophic blunders in some games late in games last season, right? Taking a knee on fourth down against South Carolina with time left on the clock. Now, it ended up not mattering. South Carolina still needed a Hail Mary, didn't complete it. North Carolina won the game. But just the fact that your coaching staff lacks the awareness not to take a knee on fourth down with time left on the clock, that scared me. They needed Sam Howell to complete a miraculous 4th-and-17 pass against Miami to keep the game-winning touchdown drive alive. Now, he completed it. That's great. But the point is, I mean, the margin between them beating Miami and losing was basically came down to one play.
Josh, you know what's interesting about that? I think Miami had 10 guys on the field on defense on that play. Just go watch it again.
On the fourth down play? Oh, my God.
Sure. I'm pretty sure.
That's even better.
I've watched that play a bunch in the offseason. I think they only had 10
That's
guys.
Even better.
Anyway.
Well,
anyway. No, so, you're spot on. And then, you know, they ice their own kicker against Virginia Tech. There's all kinds of things. You're spot on. I think Mac, where I think Mac 2.0 is getting better, is he is letting his coordinators just have their space and do their thing. And I think Jay Bateman is an up-and-coming star as a defensive coordinator.
I agree.
I think Phil Longo gets a lot of grief, as most offensive coordinators do. I mean, they put up tons of yards between the 20s. And then they don't convert. That's been the knock on him dating back to Ole Miss, and it was certainly true last year at Carolina. But I think you're getting year two in both of those systems. I think their strength and conditioning coach, they need to do all they can to keep him around. North Carolina was one of the best fourth quarter teams in the country last year, blunders aside.
Yeah.
I mean, they outscored everybody by a ton. And some of that is Sam Howell just being ice cold under pressure. And some of that, though, is – they were still fresh, even with a team that wasn't all that deep. They kind of wore teams down as it went on. So I'm with you. I think you're exactly right. People conflate Mac the recruiter with Mac the coach, and I don't think he really does much in the way of actually coaching football. He's great at everything else as it relates to running a program. The other piece of that, though, is the recruiting is not really going to take hold until like next right. year and the year after.
Right.
He's the 2020 class is great. The 2021 class looks like it's going to be awesome. But those guys either just got to campus or aren't even on campus yet. So people have moved the optimism up, I think, a year from maybe where it deserves to be. But the schedule sets up. I think that's where people are like, well, crap, we're pretty good. We're as good as basically anybody on our schedule. Why not this year? Even though I think up until a few months ago, everybody was thinking next year was the year.
Yeah. And, you know, with the changes in that schedule, it does make me feel pretty good about taking the over, but I still wouldn't take it by much. I think 8-3 yep. is about right for this team. It would not surprise me if they lost to a Virginia, right? Like, or to a Florida State. Like, again, I think they should win, but is there a game in there where Carolina, I mean, remember last year, I mean, the Georgia Tech sure. game, they struggled in that game. The Duke game that they won, they made a mess of the fourth quarter or their last drive of that game, ended up preserving the lead. Duke drives down the field, though. If Duke doesn't run a jump pass on the goal line for whatever right. reason, well, you know, Duke might win that game.
No, so. It's amazing. It's amazing the margin. You could flip that the other way.
Yeah.
You know, they lose a Pitt in overtime. They lose a Tech in sure. six overtimes. So yep. If they win both of those, they're, you know, 9 and whatever.
Yep.
And you know, so anyway, let's move on. Yep. I think I like the over. But let's move on to some other teams.
All right. Let's talk Virginia Tech. Virginia mm-hmm. Tech, 7.5. So this is kind of baked into the whole North Carolina thing, too. But I just I like that their numbers are the same because I think these two teams are incredibly close in terms of talent. They're built yep. differently. But I do feel like North Carolina gets too much. If we're making a pie chart of the hype and attention that these two teams are getting, there is way too much Carolina blue on that pie chart and not enough maroon and orange because – I think Virginia Tech is every bit as talented right now as North Carolina. You know, I actually saw a really interesting stat on Twitter earlier this week about Hendon Hooker, who was named the starting quarterback by Justin Fuente earlier this week. Hendon Hooker would have ranked, I want to say it was 11th in the country in passer rating last year had he thrown three more passes. Wow. He didn't qualify for the stat. He would have ranked ahead of Sam Howell, who everybody is touting as the next great thing in the conference. And he deserves it. It's nothing against Howell, but I don't think enough people paid attention to how good Hendon Hooker was for that team once he came in. Everybody pretty much just forgot about Virginia Tech. They were out of sight, out of mind after they were blown away on national TV on a Friday night against Duke, and they should have yep. been. I mean, that was as bad. I've been to 150 Virginia Tech football games in my life. I've never been to one as embarrassing as that night, and I thought that was the funeral for the program. That's what it felt like I was witnessing, and yet Hendon Hooker comes in. They beat Miami the next week. They score 36 points a game the rest of the season. They nearly knock off Virginia and go to the Coastal, or win the Coastal, go to the ACC championship. They played that game without their top two corners, and then without their corners against Kentucky, nearly won that game, but lost with 15 seconds to go. And oh, by the way, went on the road to Notre Dame and had the lead with 2 minutes to go. Watched Notre Dame drive all the way down the field and score with less than a minute left to beat them by one in a game that Hooker didn't even play. So I feel like Virginia Tech by the end of the season was a top 20 team. A borderline top 20. Certainly, I would say a top 25 team. But their stumbles early in the year, I think, robbed them of a lot of the attention or the credit that they probably deserved. Meanwhile, North Carolina finishes the season red hot, and they have a coach that everybody knows. So that's where you get the difference in the perception of those two teams. I love the over for Virginia Tech. The schedule is not quite as easy as North Carolina's, but I'm taking the over for the Hokies. What about you?
Yeah, I am as well, and you nailed it. And we've talked offline a lot, Josh, about how the more I have rewatched Virginia Tech season from last year, and obviously I watched it closely the first time as well. You're spot on. They were playing awesome football there for like a month and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, they were really cooking, playing as well as anybody in the conference outside of Clemson for a bulk of the season. But you are exactly right. It's a perception thing. It is what the games that most fans and probably sports writers as well saw for each team respectively. They saw Virginia Tech lose to Duke, and they saw North Carolina stand toe-to-toe with Clemson.
Yep.
And that anchored all of it. And then fast forward to the end of the year, they saw North Carolina win in a couple blowouts against average teams. They saw Tech lose to good teams under tough circumstances. Could not agree more. My counter to some of that as it relates to the perception piece is that is where Fuente needs to do a better job as the CEO of this program. And it's frankly just not an area where he excels. I think he's a really smart football mind, but he has not done a good job of managing the media, getting fans excited, keeping fans excited, building that hype and optimism, whatever you want to call it, around the program. He's let the narrative take hold where it is instead of controlling it himself. So some of that is on him. But as it relates to between the lines, oh my God, you're exactly right. This Tech team is every bit as good, probably better than North Carolina. And they need to be talked about as such, but they're not. I think their offense is much better than people are giving them credit for. I kind of thought all offseason they were one playmaker away. But I think Raheem Blackshear is that guy.
Yep.
Holy cow. If you haven't watched highlights on that guy, he's a stud. And playing for Rutgers, you know, and still running all over people. I think Tech is in a really good spot. I think their offensive line is as good as there is in the ACC, maybe.
Yep.
You bring back basically everybody on defense. I think losing Caleb Farley hurts more than, I mean, everybody, I guess people are giving that the attention it deserves. If you go back and watch the UNC Tech game from last year, which I made myself do a couple times, he was everywhere. I mean, the reason Daz Newsome had such a big game against Tech is because they couldn't do anything to Deami Brown because Caleb Farley just locked him up. And that's one of the best receivers in the conference. So that changes things. I mean, we saw at the end of the year, their defense was materially worse without those guys out there. Now, granted, Waller was out as well, but you get the point. I think they need to figure out a second corner against some of the better offenses in the league. But I'm with you. I think this team, I think, is every bit up there with anybody else, one tier below Clemson. I mean, potentially even as good as Notre Dame. I think 8-3 is really safe. I think if things break the right way, you could be looking at a 9-2 or even a 10-1 season for Tech. I really think they're that good.
Yeah. The Farley thing hurts because you look at the teams that they're going to face. It's a lot of teams that really throw the ball well. I mean, they're going to play, as you mentioned, I mean, Carolina's passing attack, I think Carolina has the best passing arsenal in the league because what they bring back at receiver is more experienced than Clemson. I like Clemson's young receivers, but you'd play Carolina's passing offense. You play Louisville, which can throw the ball all over the yard. And I'm interested. I don't know what to expect from Miami, but Miami's got weapons. They've got talent on the outside, and they threw for 400-some yards against Tech last year with Caleb Farley. And then, of course, Clemson at the end of the season. So you're playing some teams that know how to throw the ball well. So the loss of Farley, I think, is definitely going to hurt them. But they've got some young guys. I think that they'll at least replace him well. And the big key for them is, you know, Justin Hamilton coming in. Is he up for the task of replacing Bud Foster? So we'll see. But I like the over on that. All right, so those are the definitely ones I knew we'd spend a lot of time on. Let's fly through the rest of the ACC here. Quickly, Pittsburgh. You give me your thoughts on Pittsburgh. The number is 6.
Man, yeah, it's such a tough one. Cause like I said, I really like this team. I think they're as good as really – Tech and UNC and Miami. I think they're right very much in that tier. But their schedule is awful. I think they're the only team that has Clemson and Notre Dame. If not, they're one of a couple teams. But they also get Miami, Virginia Tech, FSU, Louisville. I mean, the only favor they kind of got was they don't have to go to UNC anymore. Otherwise, their schedule is as tough as it gets for anybody. So say they win the 5 they're supposed to win, lose to Clemson and Notre Dame. They've got a split against Miami, Virginia Tech, FSU, and Louisville to go over 6. Gun to my head, I think they go over. I think they'll beat Miami and FSU, maybe even Louisville. I think Pitt is really, really good. I think their defense is outstanding, and I think their offense is better than people are talking about as well. So gun to my head, I'm going over 6 with Pitt. I think they go 7-4.
I'm going to stay away from it. I don't like Pitt as much as you. The defense is pretty good, but I don't have a ton of faith in Kenny Pickett. He is by far the most polarizing guy. Nobody can make up their minds on how good Kenny Pickett really is. I watched him up close. It's one game, and I'm not trying to put too much stock into one night, but I watched Pitt walk into Blacksburg and get shut out, and they just looked lifeless. They had their moments. I mean, they beat Central Florida last year. They stood toe-to-toe with Penn State. I mean, they played well early, but losing Jalen Twyman is big for them, too.
Yep,
I'm going to stay away from it. I like where you're going, though. There's just too many games that I think they're going to lose. Like, I think Louisville, Virginia Tech, and Clemson all beat them, and Notre Dame. So they would have to run the table to hit the over. I feel like that's a push or an under, personally. But a lot of it depends on how good that offense can be. You know, I mean, last year they took a huge step back in the running game, which has kind of been their calling card since Narduzzi's gotten there. They've had great runners. So we'll see about them. So we'll move on. Let's talk about Wake Forest. So last year, Wake Forest 5.5. Well, last year, I think the win total was the same, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And everybody, I feel like, was on the over. It felt like a sucker bet you take the over, and they hit it by the middle of October. That team with Jamie Newman and Sage Surratt and Scotty Washington and Cade Carney, like, that was a great offense. By the way, the defense was a little bit better than expected, and great kicking game as well with Skiba. So Wake Forest last year was an easy, easy over bet. This year, I think it's the exact opposite. I don't see this team getting to 5.5 at all, Ross. I think they lost way too much. Virtually their entire offense is gone. Sage Surratt opted out. I'm hammering the under on 5.5. I love Dave Clawson, but I think this is a gigantic step back for them this year.
Yeah, this is my favorite bet on the whole board for the ACC. All those guys you just rattled off that were, you know, the reason for all the hype and optimism last year are gone. I see one game on the schedule, Campbell, on October 9th, that I feel really good about them winning. Basically, everything else is either pencil it in as a loss against Clemson and Notre Dame. Oh, Wake plays Clemson and Notre Dame also. So it's either a loss or, at best, a toss-up that you don't feel good about. Yes, hammer the under there. I don't really see a path forward for them to get to 6 wins that you would need to hit that over.
Yeah, I mean, talented defensive end, Carlos Basham, he's a great player, but that defense is not going to do nearly enough to keep teams from scoring, I think it will, on Wake. And they just don't have the offense. I mean, Sam Hartman's a nice prospect. Yeah, a decent year a couple years ago before Jamie Newman took that job away, but schedule isn't very forgiving. Hard for me to come up with 6 wins. It feels like they're daring you to take the under, but I'm taking it. I have no fear about taking the under there. It's my favorite bet as well. Let's actually move on. We'll move past the ACC. Let's hit a couple SEC teams here really quickly. Alabama, 8.5. So the SEC, they're only playing 10. No non-conference games in the SEC. So Alabama is 8.5. Now, you got to bet 145 to win 100 if you're betting the over. So they clearly want you to bet the under on this with that number 8.5. Meaning, I mean, Alabama hasn't lost 2 regular season games in, I want to say, it's, well, they did, I take that back. Last year, they lost 2 for the first time in almost a decade. So it's very rare that you see an Alabama team lose twice before they get to the, at least the SEC title game. What do you think about Alabama, 8.5?
Yeah, it's similar to the Clemson thing, right? Where are you really going to bet on them to lose 2 games again? I'm not. I don't care how much they juice that number. I'm not going to sit here and place a bet for Alabama to lose 2 college football games. So I would take the over, but probably not touching it. And that's partially just, I didn't follow the SEC offseason as closely, admittedly, because I wasn't sure college football was going to happen. So my SEC literacy is just not to the point where I'm comfortable enough to bet that. But you look at the name on there, and unless some people know some stuff that I don't, I can't bet Alabama to lose 2 games.
So half of their schedule is against ranked opponents, which matters for most teams. It doesn't matter for Alabama. I mean, they have 2, maybe 3 games that I feel like are losable for them. One of them is very obviously Georgia, and they get Georgia middle of October, October 17th, prime time at home. We'll see how many fans are able to show up for that, but they still get them at home. They play LSU on the road. And then they have it's between Texas A&M and Auburn, there's a chance one or the other could knock them off. I actually think A&M is better than Auburn this year. Auburn lost a lot. I don't know that we're going to get to Auburn here, but Auburn lost Derek Brown, Marlon Davidson, 2 elite front 4 guys. They lost Noah Igbinoghene out of their secondary, which I had to learn to pronounce that name during the draft.
Yeah,
so
that was pretty nice.
Yeah,
there.
I know I messed it up about 20 times on the radio, so I've learned my lesson. But Igbinoghene, he's gone though. So they've lost all these guys on defense. They bring back Bo Nix, who I thought was okay last year. I didn't think Bo Nix was all that in amazing by any stretch. He had a great moment early in the year against Oregon. They knocked off Oregon. Nix was the hero. But through much of the season, I wasn't super impressed by Bo. But, you know, year two with him, we'll see how that works. He's got Chad Morris calling the offense. But I think as far as Alabama goes, I love the over here. I think people are as crazy as this can be for a team that's top three in America, I think people are sleeping on how good Alabama really is. Alabama's my number one team. This, which, God, I should be on Feinbaum talking about this. I sound like every Alabama fan in America saying, we're not getting any respect. We're only number three.
Lord knows that's what Nick Saban's telling them right now also. You better 100%. Believe that he is making sure they know they're not getting any respect.
100%. I really do, though. Like, think about this for Bama last year, man. They lost by five to LSU with Tua on one leg. And they nearly knocked off Auburn. Had the lead in the fourth quarter of the Iron Bowl with Mac Jones at quarterback. Mac Jones actually played pretty well last year.
Yep.
At the end of the season. Played better against Michigan than Justin Fields did. And that's in the bowl game. But Mac Jones is fine. He's not Tua, yeah, but Mac Jones is a fine quarterback.
He's a throwback to what Alabama has always had at quarterback before they got more dynamic guys like Jalen Hurts and Tua.
Yep.
You put him in, he is any one of the guys that they had during their stretch of dominance before those guys arrived. So this is not an unfamiliar thing. People are like, oh, we got used to Tua and their high-flying offense. But like, Mac Jones is going to do what Alabama's always done.
I think this will look more like the Alabama teams we got used to seeing for a decade. Najee Harris is a top 64 draft pick at running back. They got two first-rounders on the offensive line. They lose Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy. They bring back Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, who are outstanding.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay.
They're loaded. I mean, and we could get to the defense too, which was injured much of last year. They get some guys back too. So I think Alabama hits the over. I think Alabama's the best team in America. All right, one more in the SEC. Let's talk about the Dogs. Let's talk about Georgia. So they're 8.5, minus 130 to the under. So they're actually daring you to take the over here on 8.5 for Georgia. As you think about the Dogs, a lot of drama surrounding them over the last couple of weeks. But
no kidding.
How do you think they fare?
Yeah, I'm going to accept their dare, I think, and take the over here. Now, somebody's going to have to lose the Georgia-Alabama game, so one of those over bets is going to start getting squirrely there quickly.
Yeah.
I really like this Georgia team. I think that defense is outrageously good. I have, you know, we have a mutual friend. Shout out Bulldog Bob. So I follow Georgia closely, just their recruiting stuff over the last couple of years. And I mean, their offensive line just has some hog mollies. And so I guess it looks, it's going to be JT Daniels, I guess, at quarterback, going to be well protected. They're going to always be able to run the ball. Zamir White, North Carolina guy, I think is kind of their next star running back in the making. Their offense is going to be what it is, potentially even really good. If JT Daniels is as good as they expect, and I think the defense is incredibly stout. So with them, it comes down to the toss-up against Alabama, and then, of course, the Georgia-Florida game. The others, Auburn, I guess. But for the most part, the schedule sets up okay for them as far as SEC schedules go. I like Georgia to go 9-1.
It's tough for me to feel good betting the over. I agree with you on virtually everything with Georgia. I think that Jamie Newman opting out was made to be such a big deal, and I don't even know that it'll matter. I think JT Daniels was the better quarterback. I said that the moment he transferred there. I said, if he's eligible, I would not be shocked if he won the starting job. I don't know what happened with Jamie Newman. Like, I feel bad, you know, talking about, oh, did Newman lose the quarterback battle and walk away? But that seems to be the popular opinion. If you listen to people both who are close to Georgia, but also people nationally who know what's happening down there, say it sounds like JT Daniels might just have been better than Newman. And I mean, if Newman goes to Georgia and loses that job in fall camp, his draft stock plummets. So it makes sense that he might decide, you know, hey, given the risks and the fact that I may not even win this job, I'm just going to walk away now. So rest in peace to the Jamie Newman era at Georgia, May 2020 to September 2020. But I'm with you that they should go over. They should go over. But that means they would have to at least split the Alabama and the Florida game. I don't think they'll beat Alabama. As good as I think Georgia is, as good as that defense is, I just think Alabama has too much firepower. I think they'll outscore Georgia in that game. But then you get to that Florida game. I think Georgia is better than Florida, but not by much. I just feel nervous betting that because then they do have to run the table against everybody else, which they should.
Right.
But, yep. I mean, God, last year there's a South Carolina game. It does feel like, you know, every now and then Georgia has they're susceptible to that stumble as well. So I agree with you that it should go over, but I'm going to stay away from it. So those are the two big ones in the SEC. Quickly, yep. I'll just tell you, bet the under on Arkansas. It's 1.5. You have to bet 160 to win 100. I don't think they're going to win a game. They're so bad. And I love Sam Pittman, the new coach. He seems like a character. He's like a mini Ed Orgeron, but bet the under. Just do it. They're not going to win two games. They may not even win one. That's hilarious that they're daring you to bet the under on a 1.5 line, but I don't see any world in which they get to two wins. So we'll move past the SEC. Ross, I quickly want to talk Big 12 before we're going to move to the week one picks. Oklahoma is 8.5. So the Big 12 is playing their nine-game conference schedule plus a non-con. So they're going to play 10. Oklahoma is at 8.5, and Texas is at 7.5. I'm going to tell you right here, Ross, I'm curious what you think. I think Texas wins the Big 12. I think Oklahoma and they're getting way too much credit for what Lincoln Riley has done the last few years. And I get it. Like, I understand it. Lincoln Riley has always had a top-five offense. But he's also always had a quarterback with experience. And while I think Spencer Rattler is going to be great, as a young guy, we haven't seen a freshman in that offense yet. Is he going to be as fluid and as, you know, as flawless as it feels like Baker was, as Kyler Murray was, or Jalen Hurts? Maybe there are some stumbling blocks. But beyond the quarterback, it really goes down to me, the fact that, Ross, I don't know if you know this, but their top three running backs from last year are gone. They thought they were going to have Kennedy Brooks. He opts out. Trey Sermon, who has started at times for them, has been part of a platoon in the backfield. I hate it for this kid. He transfers to Ohio State, and then Ohio State season gets canceled. Brutal. He was going to be the main man for the Buckeyes, so he's out. And then Ramondre Stevenson, their third-string running back, he's suspended, and I don't know how long that's going to last, but nevertheless, so they've been depleted in the backfield. They're a lot younger at receiver. I'm not worried about them having talent, but I felt like the last few years they've been so good with guys like Mark Andrews at tight end and Grant Calcaterra and, you know, obviously Hollywood Brown and then CeeDee Lamb. I feel like this is going to be a bit of a retool at that position where they're still going to be great, but I don't think they're going to be just otherworldly scoring 30 seconds like they've been doing the last few years. I think Oklahoma takes a step back, and I think Texas is that good. They're really experienced. They're an older team. It's the most veteran team that Tom Herman's had. They have Sam Ellinger's the better quarterback in the conference. They have a great deep backfield. They're good in all the places that Oklahoma isn't. And for that reason, I didn't even mention, you know, Oklahoma does have a decent defense, but they lose Kenneth Murray, who was a first-round pick. I think Oklahoma is a little bit of a retool. Still a top two, top three team in the conference, but I'm actually going to lean Texas. I love the over on 7.5 for Texas, and I'm going to stay away from the 8.5 for Oklahoma. They still may hit the over, but I think when we get to the Big 12 title game, I think Texas is the better team.
I like that a lot. I think if you look at it, you could make a strong argument, and you just did, that Texas is as good or better, and you get them for a whole point lower.
Yeah.
And so as it relates to betting, Texas is for sure the bet there. Absolutely.
Yeah, I would have to go there. I'm shocked that Oklahoma – I mean, I get that Oklahoma deserves, you know, some, I guess, wiggle room for, you know, just how dominant they've been the last few years. They've won the Big 12 5 years in a row, but – I mean, you just have to look at these two teams on paper at some point. And if it's not this year for Texas – I don't know if it's ever going to happen. So there may be more pressure on Tom Herman than most any other coaches in America. So we'll move on. I was going to get to some of our bold predictions, but you can go read those on cfbcountry.com. I've got 11 bold predictions for the 2020 season, stuff I think is going to happen. A few of them I already mentioned in the podcast, a few more that you can go read. But let's move on to week one. We got real live football. Let's talk about the games. We are just a few hours away. So if you're listening to this on Friday, we're either going to sound really smart or really dumb, but we got to give some takes on Miami and UAB. UAB last year coming off a bowl loss to Appalachian State, lost in the Conference USA championship game. Shout out to Bill Clark for sticking around Birmingham when they were disbanded. He brings the program back. They've been very good for the last few years. But Miami is a team we didn't touch on in the ACC over under. So give me your thoughts on Miami quickly. But 14.5 is the line here. Where are you leaning?
Yep. Yeah. So I am gonna do what I hate doing. I'm gonna buy a little bit of the Miami hype early in the year. Mm-hmm. I think defensively they won't be quite as good as they could have if Gregory Rousseau had not opted out. I think between him and Quincy Roche, they were going to have the best pass rushing duo in the country, maybe by far. So Rousseau opts out, so the defense will still be fine. They're Miami. They have a ton of talent. I think Derek King is going to bring an element to that Miami offense that we have not seen. For whatever reason, Miami, with all of this speed and this talent, hasn't really had a guy like this that I can remember.
Nope.
You know, they're bringing out the Brad Kayas of the world, and certainly Jayden Williams, like more like kind of athletic, more pro style guys. Like you bring a De'Aaron King, who is dynamic, was a Heisman candidate just last year with Houston before he bailed after four games. Report down there that he looks awesome. I think Miami early in the year, they're going to come out hot. Now I think they'll take some losses in the middle of the year and maybe do what Miami always does and run out of steam towards the end. But as far as it relates to this game, I love that it's week one and I'm already like a couple layers deep into the transitive property. A couple weeks ago when Central Arkansas played Austin Peay, okay. I was texting you nonstop because I had bet on Central Arkansas.
Yep.
And I was texting you nonstop, Central Arkansas stinks. They stink. This team is horrible. They ended up winning. And covering, respect.
They did.
But last week they play UAB and they lose by only 10. So this is a UAB team that I didn't watch a second of that game, but I look at the final score, 45-35.
Mm-hmm.
The UAB team that gave up 35 points. Now I do think a couple of those were like fumble recovery situations. Whatever.
Yes.
Whatever. Central Arkansas stinks. They stink.
Okay. So
they stink. So I'm already a couple – if this UAB team can only beat Central Arkansas by 10, then Miami's going to smoke them. So I like – 14.5 is maybe a hair rich because jokes aside, I think UAB is okay. And they've obviously already played a game, so they're going to have those first game like weirdness out of the way like we saw with Navy, not tackling, all that stuff. I get it. I think I would take Miami 14.5. I think they come out and win this game comfortably. I love it, though, in a teaser. So if you're getting into the teaser situation, definitely tease them down to 7.5. But I like them at 14.5 also.
All right. So the Rossi 3 stacks transitive property is my favorite part of betting every single week because there is absolutely no context. It's just look at the score and what's the line on this game? They should win by more. All right. So I hear you. But I'm glad you at least acknowledged that. I want to say two of Central Arkansas's scores in that game one was, I think, a pick six, and the other, the drive started on, like, the six-yard line. So that game was a blowout going into the fourth quarter, and Central Arkansas scored a couple games late.
No. So I undersold how much I paid attention to it. I didn't watch any of it, but I was following along from a gambling perspective. I think Big Cat or someone was betting, like, the first half line. UAB was up 28-7 and then fumbled. I think they had like a scoop and score.
Yep.
And then fumbled again immediately and they had like a 6-yard drive. So it went from 28-7 to 28-21 right before half. But then the second half was competitive also. So regardless, we're talking too much about the UAB Central Arkansas game. That's still, I'm anchored on UAB not being all that good. So I'm taking Miami.
I'm going to take Miami. Here's the other stat that I think everybody needs to know if you're going to bet this game. UAB last season averaged less than 11 points per game against top 60 defenses by S&P Plus, or now SP Plus, as Bill Connolly has had to change it.
That's right.
SP Plus. So our favorite stat. But UAB was not very good against the better defenses they played. And even though Miami's defense isn't as good as it could have been with Rousseau, still a better, it's a top 60 defense, no question. I think UAB was getting a little bit too much love for being a 9-win team last year. It's a good program, credit to them, but I actually think Miami smokes them. I think Miami comes out, wants to make a statement. They're excited about De'Aaron King. I think they want to feature De'Aaron King as much as possible. I think he goes off. And I think De'Aaron King, real quickly on Miami, I'm not
I'm not in on the Derek King Heisman or Derek King ACC Player of the Year bandwagon, because I look at a lot of his moments at Houston. He dominated against some bad defenses.
Yep.
And he looked to me like a guy who's not really a quarterback, but just a great athlete playing quarterback. And you can get away with that at the, you know, group of five level, and you can be really successful. Can he do that in the ACC against some of the better defenses he's going to face? When teams force him to maybe be more of a passer, can he beat them? And we'll see. I mean, he'll be great. It kind of reminds me a little of Bryce Perkins the last couple of years, where not a great passer, good enough, but he makes the plays with his legs that'll win. There could be some bit of that with Miami, but I think they try to feature him off the bat tonight. I think Miami wins comfortably. I actually like them by close to four touchdowns. I think they smoke them. But let's move on. All right, quickly, let's hit Duke Notre Dame here, Ross. Duke Notre Dame. The line is 20. Duke coming off a bit of a down year last year. Other than that Virginia Tech win, it wasn't really a great season for Duke. So what do you think about this one? Touchdown Tommy Rees, your boy, is the new offensive coordinator in South Bend.
Well, I mean, just for that alone, I'm going to take Duke. I can't bet on Tommy Rees in his first game. Come on, the last time I saw Tommy, he was costing me $500.
This is a tough one for you. You are a North Carolina fan. I didn't think about this. So you've got to choose between your two mortal enemies. I mean, I guess Coach K is not on the sideline for Duke, so
yeah,
that might be the difference.
Let's be clear. I don't have much against David Cutcliffe here. What is the over-under in this game?
56.
I'd be more tempted to take the under.
Me too.
I think Notre Dame, offensively early in the year, they lost a lot of playmakers. They do bring back an awesome offensive line, so they should be okay there. Duke will be solid. They tend to be okay defensively. They've got a great defensive end. They'll be okay. We don't know what Chase Bryce is going to look like. I think he could maybe hang around, make him a little scrappy there, but I think I'm not touching the line. I would be more inclined to take the under in this game, certainly in a teaser.
Love the under. I think if you want to tease this, you could tease it down to 13, tease the under to 63, and feel really good about it. I don't think Duke scores a lot of points in this game. I actually think Notre Dame will cover. I'll bet Notre Dame minus 20. They were 5-0 against the spread down the stretch last year. Duke, very good in September. 10-3, very good against the number, at least. 10-3. In the last 13 games in September against the spread. So they have come out early and actually fared pretty well as of late. But Notre Dame's actually done a pretty good job too. They're 5-1 against the number in their last six games early in the season. So something's got to give there. I like where you're going, though. I actually might tease this. I'm going to go minus 13. I'm going to tease at 7 and take the over-under at 63. Give me Notre Dame like 38-10, 38-17 type game, and it comes in on the under. But I liked buying a little bit of cushion there. I'd feel pretty good about it. So I'm going to bet Notre Dame minus 20, but I'll also do that little teaser with the under. Let's have some fun. A couple more. I don't know how much you know about this one, Ross, but Charlotte, Appalachian State, do you have any thoughts on this? This is a big deal. I mean, I live in Charlotte, and I cannot tell you, man, like Will Healy has – made Charlotte football matter. People are very excited about Club Lit. They're all in on the mascot heads and the shirtless locker room celebrations. And he got them to a bowl game last year. And Appalachian State, I did not know this, but I'm on the radio every day in Charlotte, and now I realize Appalachian State hates Charlotte because they're the big city boys that haven't really done anything. And App State's that they're the mountain country boys that all they've done is been busy winning the Sun Belt and FCS national titles for years. And now it feels like Charlotte's already getting more respect and more love from the elite Charlotte media. So I feel like App State might come out and want to prove a point in this game. But the line is 17. Are you going to dabble in any action on this one? We only have like 7 games to bet on. So if you want to.
So yes, in that sense, I will. Didn't this game open a decent bit more in App State's favor? I think this line has moved.
It has moved
like
3 or 4
points.
Yep, it opened at 20.5, and it's been bet down to 17.
Yeah, so App State, if I recall, I think they had a couple or at least one very significant opt out recently. They certainly lost a lot of talent off of last year's team. So I think they were maybe a step back candidate. So did Charlotte, though. Charlotte, you know, obviously went to a bowl game, all the stuff you just said. Will Healy, I think I'm all in on. Gun to my head, I wouldn't bet it at all normal, but I would tease Charlotte. up to 24. Mm-hmm. I think that's the play here.
So Corey Sutton is the player that opted out, and he mm-hmm. was actually a guy that I missed parts of last season too, if I'm not yep. mistaken. So it's a loss, but also it's a guy who wasn't much of a factor for a team last year that nearly went undefeated. I mean, they don't lay an egg in a Thursday night game against Georgia Southern. App State might have a case for a Group of Five bowl or New Year's Six bowl.
Right.
I actually think App State smoked Charlotte, and I say that as someone who loves what Will Healy's doing, but Charlotte lost Alex Highsmith, who was their all-conference and all-American defensive end. He got drafted by the Steelers. He's now a Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, when you're a program like Charlotte, that's a huge loss, right? Like, you lose a third-round pick defensive end. That's yep. You don't replace that in 1 year. And I think even more importantly, they lost their a tackle, Cameron Clark, who's now on the Jets. So they lost two NFL players off of a team last year that barely made a bowl. They also lost their stud running back, though they did get a transfer in from Northern Illinois. I know everything about Charlotte football, by the way. I hope everybody listening is impressed with my knowledge of the 49er football program. But it matters. Like, you had three studs that are gone now. The running back I'm not as worried about because you get the transfer in. But I think they take a slight step back early in the year as they have some new players stepping in. App State, even with Corey Sutton not playing this season, you bring back the quarterback, you bring back Malik Williams, you bring back Thomas Hennigan. They lost Darrington Evans, but they've got a bunch of good running backs up there. First game for their head coach, Sean Clark. I'm going to go App State easily. But I think the other number that I would hammer here is the total. The total's 59.5. I think it goes over. Charlotte is going to score points. And Appalachian State, I think, is going to run up and down the field on them. The last year's game was, the final was like 56-41, something like that.
Wow.
It was nuts. There was a couple kick returns for touchdowns. It was kind of a little wonky, but I still think this is a game where there's a lot of points. I love the over here, and I would probably dabble in taking Appalachian State as well. So I'll take them. I'll take both of those there.
Dude,
all right.
Right on. I'm not gonna argue with the king of Charlotte football.
I say all that, and Charlotte's probably going to pull off the upset this weekend. But let's finish with Charlotte, or not Charlotte. Let's finish with Syracuse and UNC. Your boys, Carolina, we just spent a lot of time talking about them, so let's just get right into the game itself. Syracuse is getting 22 points on the road in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I think you sent me the tweet from there earlier this week. This is the most points UNC has been favored by against a Power 5 team since 2012, which is nuts. It's too many points. I'm not touching this game at all early in the year, though I think UNC wins comfortably. I think Syracuse had some higher profile for their standard opt-outs. They do still have a solid secondary. I think their offensive line is really going to struggle. I think UNC wins, but would not shock me at all if they won like 42-21 and Syracuse covered, right? It's just a big number. I think if anything, I would tease UNC as I tend to do in those situations. But I don't love it. This is actually not one I'm that interested in. I think also keep in mind, decent chance of rain and some storms on Saturday in Chapel Hill. So it could add to an already wonky factor early in the year. Syracuse, new defensive coordinator, which kind of maybe have an element of surprise there. UNC has not been preparing for them, but for a few weeks now. They weren't on the schedule previously. So there's a lot of factors that lead me to think UNC will win comfortably, and there's just enough to say, let's pump the brakes a little bit. I'm not touching it. What do you think?
It's hard for me to argue against you. I love Carolina to win big here. I think Syracuse is terrible. I mean their offensive line is a mess. As you mentioned, they've had some tough breaks with some opt outs and with some testing. So I don't know how prepared Syracuse is going to be for this game. With all of the continuity that North Carolina brings back, this to me feels like a game Carolina is going to step on the throat early and win big. I'll bet that. I hate this too because I'm betting all favorites. Like, I'm betting Miami. I'm laying points with Carolina. I'm laying App State and I'm laying Notre Dame. Like, I am all on favorites this week, which is I hate doing. I
too
hate
many favorites
doing it.
And too many favorites and too many unders, except for the App State game, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not nearly as fun as betting dogs and overs.
I know.
But yeah, I don't know. Early in the year though, man, like, I think we're defaulting to like what we're comfortable with in a season when we're not comfortable with anything.
Yeah. I think the smart play would have been to get on this line early. It opened at 19 and it has been bet up past that key number at 21. So getting past 21 to me is a danger zone. I'll I'll stay away from it. I don't think I'm going to put my hard-earned cash on it. But if I had to, I do think Carolina wins this like 42-14. I think they win pretty comfortably. I think the offense is going to have a field day. But with the rain, you never know. That could be definitely something
just
to keep an
eye on. Keep an eye on that. If it wakes up and it's a beautiful day, I like Carolina. If not, either stay away or maybe even get squirrely. And
we might need a game every week. Keep an eye on the weather game. That is we're gonna have to look at that into that for the rest of the season.
I like that. That's good. Yeah.
Keep an eye on the weather. Hey, you never know. A little bit of rain.
I love that. How much money have you won over the years, though, Josh? By like betting? I mean, the NC State Hurricane game was the easiest bet of all time.
That will go down in infamy. That was the easiest under I ever bet. They couldn't move the ball more than 5 yards. And what was the final of that game like? 10-6 or something?
I don't remember.
It was nothing. Wild. Yeah, the over-under was like 60, and I don't even think they got to 20. Betting the weather is important, man. Keep it in mind. That's why you don't get that kind of expert analysis anywhere but right here with Rossi Three Stacks on the College Football Country Podcast. All right, Ross, we do have to run. We've gone over our time, but you know what? We were just that excited for football again, man. It's here. We'll have plenty more time to break down more. Hopefully, we'll have more time. Hopefully, we're talking about Virginia Tech and UVA next week and SEC football in a couple weeks. It's here, man. So we're going to enjoy it, and hopefully we'll win a little bit of money, too, on some games this weekend. But we'll catch up with you again next week for more, man. Appreciate it.
Josh, thanks so much, buddy.
All right, that's going to do it for the College Football Country Podcast. Make sure you download it on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, all those places. And go win some money this weekend. Watch some football. Have some fun. Let's go get it. See y'all next week.